Okay, we are on page 752. We are, Pasuk Zayin on page 752. Okay, last time we went off discussing the concept of vidui, of confession, because basically the Torah is speaking about if a person took money, refused to give it back, so to speak. You want me to go get him and close the door?
No, my husband can do it, but I'm just getting permission from you.
And if I say no?
I'll leave it. Go find a sissy, something.
You can now come with a winter coat. Okay. Right, the Torah says, as Rashi explains, that a person denied, like he said, he stole something, denied it, swore. So then the Torah says you have to confess. We said this is the source of all confessions in the Torah. Last week we learned at great length why you need to do vidui in confession. But just to get back to the pasuk itself, v'zvadas chatasim shasu, they have to confess the sins that they did. V'heishiv v'sashamim v'reishay, they need to return the for his guilt, meaning you have to give back the principal. V'chamishisei yisavolov, and an additional...
Next week
there's no shir, so you're lucky. Chamishi sayyei sevalov, and you have to give an additional fifth, which is a quarter. V'nasen lasher asham lay. Okay, basically the Torah says, what happens? You steal money, you deny it, you swear falsely, okay? So when you wake up to do tshuva, obviously... So then, you need to pay their principal plus an additional fifth, which means a quarter. Now the Torah says, and who do you give it to? To the guy you stole it from. Okay? Just like we learned, if you steal something, you pay kafel, you pay double. To whom do you pay? To the guy you stole it from. So here also, because you swore falsely, that's the problem over here. Because you swore falsely, so then you have to pay an additional fifth. Besides, as the pasuk is soon going to say, you have to bring a korban asham. Gets an offering. V'im ein lo ish goyel, what happens if the person has no relatives? L'hashiv ha'ashem elav, to return the money that you owe him. Okay, and this is a very interesting pasuk. The pasuk says an expression, if a man doesn't have a relative. So the Gemara says, how is that possible? Every Jew has a 15th cousin 20 times removed. Bottom line is, every Jew go back to Yaakov Avinu. You have a relative. What do you mean? The Torah says a person doesn't have a relative. So Rashi explains in the Gemara, there's only one analogous case of this. A guy steals from a ger, from a convert. The convert never got married, doesn't have any relatives. So then the Torah says, who do you pay it to? You have to pay it to the Kohen. And as Rashi explains, the Kohen that's on that shift, that particular week. We learned it's divided up by shifts, so you pay it to the Kohen. Melvad Ela Kippurim. In addition to the ram of Kippur, not Yom Kippur, it means a forgiveness. Ashiachapid by Olav, that he'll be forgiven from it. So now, the interesting din is as follows. If you swear falsely, and then you decide to do shuva, you're called, whatever, you have to pay, bring a korban asham, and you have to pay a principal that you stole, plus an additional fifth. What happens if the guy has no relatives? And as Rashi says, you have a cousin of this or that, I mean, you have to have somebody. So Rashi says it refers to a ger, shemes, ve'en le'yoshim. Okay? So you have to give it that in addition to the korban, the sin offering that you need to bring. V'chol truma l'chol kotche b'nei Yisrael, and any truma, we'll soon see what that means, that for all holiness of the Yidden, any of the holy things that the Yidden do, asher kriv l'kohen, that you bring to the kohen, okay, it shall be his. What does it mean it should be his? It means it should be referring going to the Kohen. Now, This is another interesting halachic concept over here. Rashi says, which truma do you bring to a kohen? I mean, a kohen comes to you and takes it. Right? You don't bring truma to a kohen. The din is, machzalei lebeis agrones, the kohen comes to your house to get truma. What happens? So what does it mean that the pasuk says you're bringing it to the kohen? So Rashi says it doesn't mean here truma, it means bikurim. That's what Rashi says. The first fruits, because the din was the first fruits he bought Yerushalayim, but the Torah never says what to do with it. The Torah in Parshas Kisavi, when the Torah discusses the mitzvah of bikurim, the Torah says just bring it to Yerushalayim. Now what do you do with it? The Torah doesn't say. So Rashi says this is what this pasuk is teaching us, that bikurim go to the kohen. The difference is, bikurim you have to bring to the kohen. Terumah, the kohen has to come to you. That's the way Rashi learns over here in the parsha. Other mefarshim, like he brings on here with Ramban, that it means terumah. When does it become the kohen's? When you bring it. And this is another din I do. I would like to explain. It's a very interesting halach and teira, which is called teivas hanov. The din is, I have to give truma to a kohen. I have to give gifts to the kohen. Now sometimes the Torah says, which kohen gets it? Like first, you bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, right? So if it's a kohen, a meat that the kohen eats, which kohen gets it? The kohen on the shift. It's not up to you to decide you want to give it to your uncle kohen. You have to give it to the kohen on shift. Certain gifts, the Torah says, you can give it. You have to give it to a kohen, you have to give it to a levi, but it's your choice. It's your choice. What does it mean, your choice? A kohen just can't come and take it. I have the right, granted it's not mine, I have to give it to a kohen, but I can give it to the kohen, my choice. What happens if the kohen comes and grabs it? Doesn't ask, he just comes and takes it. Typical Jewish kohen. The din is, it's what's called Teves Hanah, and there's an argument in the Gemara if Teves Hanah is money or not. What does that mean? Teves Hanah literally means the good of the benefit. That's simply the Teva of the Hanah. Which means like this. Like we said, I have to give it to a kohen, but I have a certain right that I can give it to the kohen I want. No kohen can just come and grab it and say, I'm a kohen, I got it. I can give it to the kohen of my choice. Is that right worth money or not? Is that worth money or not?
What do you mean worth money?
I'll give you an example. What happens, like I said, I have to give things to the kohen.
Yeah.
I can give it to you or him or whatever, any kohen I like. What happens if you come and grab it for me? I don't want to give it to you, just come and take it. Now really, you can come along and say, hey, you got to go to a kohen, I'm a kohen, I got it. Do you have to give me money to reconcile what the pleasure that I had to give it to any kohen of my choice and it was taken away from me? Do you have to give me your money or not? So there's two opinions in the Gemara. One opinion says, Teves Hanah is Mammon. That right is worth money.
The kohen right or the owner
no,
of the...
No, I have a right to give it to any kohen I want.
Yeah, so.
Right? But what happens if you take away that right from me?
Because you take the
you
pleasure.
Just grabbed it.
You take the pleasure.
You took my pleasure.
Yeah.
Now, is that pleasure, does it have a monetary value or not?
And if it's
which
how
point
much?
You looking at?
So one opinion in the Gemara says, Teves Hanah is Mammon. There's a value to it, whatever Bez Din feels.
Yeah.
And another opinion says, it's not money. And most opinions rule that it's not considered money. What would be the difference? If you come and grab it from me, you're a kohen. Yeah, you come and grab it from me. Can I demand from you payment, not for what you took, Let's say you took $50 worth of truma. That's a kohen. I can't. It's not mine. So one opinion says you have to give him, let's say, $3. Another opinion says you don't have to give him $3. So the Ramban learns over here, what does it mean when the pasuk says v'chol truma l'chol kol asher yakrivu l'kohen, that you bring to the kohen lo yihi as his. So Rashi says, it can't be truma because you don't bring truma to the kohen. The kohen comes to you. So Rashi says, what does it mean? Bikurim. But Ramban learns, no, it could mean truma. So why is the pasuk saying that you bring to the kohen? Yes, so exactly, this is exactly what the pasuk says. Lo yihia, with a vav. When does it become the kohen's? Asher yakriv al hakohen, when you give it to him. That's when it becomes his. But until you give it to him, it's not his. So according to Ramban, the pasuk could be speaking by truma. By the way, these are two opinions in the Medrash, in the Sifra. One opinion says the pasuk over here, like Rashi says, means bikurim. And the other opinion says, no, it means truma. You don't bring truma to the kohen. What the pasuk is teaching us, when does truma become the kohen's? When you give it to him. What?
Somebody steals your mitzvah.
You also have to pay.
Right?
The Gemara says,
sort of like
it's not a mitzvah. Because I already separated. I did the mitzvah already by separating it.
It's privilege.
Every time what? Different
case. Well, no, I know, but one second.
What if a simple Jew in Israel steals it from another Israel, so the second person who stole it gives it to a Kohen? Is he liable to pay any monetary value to the first?
Yeah, because he stole his...
Gave it to the Kohen.
Oh, you mean because he stole something that didn't belong to him? He doesn't have to pay back that Jew because it wasn't his anyway. The guy did an aveda, by the way. Anyway, he did a sin. But who cares? As long as you don't have to pay money, it's not a problem.
So in your case, teruma and bikurim the same?
No, one opinion says this is truma.
Now it's telling the same. You can go give the...
Normally the kohen, you call up the kohen, or you text him, and you tell him, come, truma's waiting for you. He comes to your house and tell you. There's no mitzvah bringing it to the kohen. The mitzvah is separating the truma. What he's saying is, I was answering him on what he asked. The Gemara says, if I steal a mitzvah from you, I also have to pay you money. The Gemara says a mitzvah, there's a monetary value to a mitzvah. The Gemara says. And you have to estimate how much it is. But the Gemara says a mitzvah has a monetary value. Therefore, if I steal a mitzvah from you, I have to pay you.
They got the reward from mitzvah?
Yeah, you get the reward of mitzvah anyway.
Both of them, you're one of them.
Not the guy that stole. But
he did it.
Wasn't his mitzvah, wasn't his stuff to give. It was, if he steals
mitzvah,
it from me.
Mitzvah is nothing of value, it's nothing belongs to anybody.
Mitzvah, the Gemara says, is money. No, if I have to separate truma, that truma has to go to the kohen. That's value, that's things.
You already separated. You're good.
Right, so I'm saying the mitzvah is to separate. Giving it to the kohen, That's a financial aspect. But
Torah says you have to give the tzedakah. If any person comes and takes it from you,
that's stealing.
It's worse. You get money from...
That's stealing. See, kohen, truma is kohen property. My money is not tzedakah property until I give it. You can't... That's mamash stealing.
Even though it's separated.
Yeah. Even if you have a tzedakah account, okay, and a poor man comes and steals it, he's stealing. And if he swears falsely, he has to pay even 25% more.
So,
your tzedakah fund gets money. What?
Where in Chumash do we learn about this thing with stealing and mitzvah? Is there anywhere
in Chumash? No, the Gemara talks about it. The Gemara, in Chumash itself, it's not there. The Gemara discusses, though, if a mitzvah has a certain monetary value to it.
You say that they have the in shift, they get the truma or...
No. The bikurim.
Bikurim, you should be in shift.
Yeah.
Of truma.
Truma, not truma. I give to the one I want. Here, when you, if the guy is a ged, and you stole money from him, swore falsely, so then you have to give it to the money and the fifth. The 25%. You have to give it to the kohen. Okay, weiter. Ish es kadoshav lo yihyu. And then the pasuk says like this. A man's holy shall be his. Okay? So Rashi says, what does this mean? That because we're speaking about giving all the tithing and the gifts to the Kohen and Levi, I would think they can come and forcibly take it. So the Pasuk says, no. Le'ish ha-sheyiten ha-kohen, when you give it to the Kohen, okay, then lo yihia, then it will be given. Now Rashi says, Rashi interprets the Pasuk, Rashi brings on from the Medrash the following. I mean, the Pasuk sounds a little bit redundant. It says, a man, his holiness shall be his, and what a man gives to the Kohen shall be his. Like, what is the Pasuk saying? So Rashi says in the Medrash, the Pasuk says like this, if you don't give, let's say, the 10% of your grain, yeah, next year, your field's only going to produce 90%. In other words, you thought you got out of the 10%, there's going to say, lo, you're not going to, this you're going to get, the 10% that you're not giving, the land is going to produce less. 10%, Rashi says. Mishem ha'akim ha'sreisav, a person holds back his tithes. Ve'in ha'nesnim, he says, sof, shein tzadeo eisa el ha'achad mi'asoda, he's only going to give a tenth of what you're supposed to produce.
Is that what they say by tzedakah too?
Probably. Okay. Now starts the Saita story. Saita, as an introduction, is a woman whose husband accuses her of committing adultery. She was warned. There was what's called kinui, that he warned her, I don't want you to be with this and this guy. And she went with this guy. There's no witnesses proving, and I'm just saying a basic outline of the story. There's no witnesses to prove it, because if there's witness she committed adultery, then she gets killed because she committed adultery. There's no witnesses, okay, but the husband suspects her. And he has pretty strong, because they saw they went together and they were alone in a room, and he has good suspicion. So he brings it to the Kohen, okay, and they do a whole procedure with writing things on with erasable ink and parchment, and they erase the ink and water, special water with dirt of the Mishkan. We'll see all the details, understand the general story. She drinks the water. She's innocent. Her stomach is blessed. She gives birth easily to beautiful kids and everything. And great. She's guilty. Her stomach explodes. And she dies. Okay? This is the only... Sure.
In time of becoming a Toshta.
In fact, there's a story in the Medrash. Listen to this story, it's a doozer. Story in the Medrash that there are two sisters that looked alike. There's Daima Zula Zula. So probably maybe the twins. Okay? Two sisters, identical twins. One of the husbands warned his wife, call him Rachel and Leah. Okay? So Rachel's husband warned her. He was thought she was and he warned her, I don't want you with this guy. And they found her with this guy. But no proof, of course. So he has to take Rachel to the Beis HaMikdash. On the way to Yerushalayim, they go through Leah's city. On the way to the Beis HaMikdash. So Rachel says to her husband, "Oy, I want to go say hello to my sister. Let me, I want to go say hello to my sister." Okay, go say hello to your sister. Comes to her sister, she tells her the story. Listen, I have a problem. I'm guilty, as charged. I know if I go there, my stomach is going to plots open. You know, we look alike. Maybe you could switch. Get dressed in my clothes. You go to the Beis HaMikdash. You're innocent. Yeah, I'm innocent. For sure, I'm innocent. And she says, I'll take your place. He won't even know the difference. It's how much they looked at the wives in those days. They didn't know the difference. And they took... The other sister went to the Beis HaMikdash. They give her the water. Nothing happens because she's not innocent. The woman that drank the water was innocent. It was Leah. And on the way home, she stops by her sister's house to tell her the good news that they're innocent. And they hugged and kissed each other. And it said the smell from the water went from the innocent to the guilty, and she died on the spot. In fact, Rashi alludes to the story, by the way. Rashi says an expression over here It's very interesting because the Mefarshim don't say, I happen to see the story. Miamleyes brings it down, but it says over here, Ish Ish. I'll find it here better. Here. The Pasuk says, Ish Aisa Shechva Zera, and Rashi says that, Kamaisi Bishtei Achias, Shahyodei Mezulazu. Rashi said, like the story that the Medrash says, Rashi doesn't say what the story is. But the Mamre is bringing down the story of actually the story that I just said with the two sisters. So Rashi alludes to the story of the Medrash, but it's a true story that happened. Now, the Gemara says, by the way, at the end of Saita, that and during the second Beis HaMikdash, there was such corruption in the world and immorality that they stopped drinking, giving the Saitas to drink. Because if there's too much immorality, then the Saita water doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Too much. It says we'll soon see the purpose of the of this. We'll soon see. Okay. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lema Hashem said to Moshe. David of Bnei Yisrael speak to the Yidden v'amarta aleihem. And Rashi quotes in the Medrash a very interesting Medrash. What's the connection between Saita to what we just learned about bringing things to the Kohen? Yeah, we just learned about bringing things to the Kohen. So Rashi says in the Medrash, if you don't come to the Kohen to bring him the stuff you need to bring him, you're going to end up bringing your wife to the Kohen. So the Torah says, you better bring the things you need to bring to the Kohen. So Rashi says, Hashem says, I swear that you're going to have to bring her, the Saita, to the Kohen. You're going to have to bring your wife. So he says, Hashem says to him, you know what? Bring the right stuff, you won't have to bring the wrong stuff. Okay. Now, Rashi explains, what is this concept? First of all, why does it say Ish Ish? There's a lot of interesting Rashi's of the approach of the Medrashim. Rashi says, what's the double expression Ish Ish? A man, a man. Okay? So Rashi says, the double expression is, because the Pasuk says, Umo'ala bo'mal, she committed treachery, like a me'ila, against the husband. So Rashi's friends, she did two sins over here. She's going against God, Hashem Ish Mulchama, and she's going against her husband. It's not only a sin against the husband, she's doing a sin actually against God and her husband. Both, by committing this crime. Now Rashi says, okay, Rashi says, how does the word here, Sishte? By the way, everybody knows in Hebrew, Samach and sin are interchangeable. Okay? So, Saita, it's called a Saita, which is part with a Samach. But in the Torah says, Kisiste Ishte. Okay? Now, Rashi says, what is the expression Sishte Ishte? Rashi says two things. First of all, in Hebrew also, Shin and Tav are interchangeable. Okay? Shin and Tav are interchangeable. So Rashi says the word sister is tot midarke hatznius. She went away from the way of modesty. Okay? Rashi, pshat tot midarke hatznius. She left the modest way. She did it, such things already that the husband started accusing her of committing immorality. The first interpretation, Rashi says, that a person doesn't commit adultery, okay? Now Rashi uses the word about adultery. Rashi says, what is the word sishteh ishtei? It comes the word shote. Right? Shintasei, yeshoite. Okay? Shoite means, Gemara says, Rashi says, people commit adultery, it's a shtus, it's a foolish spirit that entered the mind. The Gemara really takes it a step further. Gemara says, Amar Shlokish, Ein Adam Eved Aveda Eli Im Kein Nichnes Beiruach Shtus. The Shlokish says, a person does not commit a sin unless if a foolish spirit entered the mind. Okay? Today, in the court system, which doesn't exist in Torah, today, according to that Gemara, anytime you sin, you should be getting out of it because of temporary insanity. Because the Gemara says, you become insane, and that causes a person to sin. In Torah, it's not a a way out, like in the civil system. It Gemara says the only way a person sins is because they go mishuga.
Shtus. For a long time.
For a short time. Temporary shtus.
Something disconnected.
But the Reish Lakish, Rashi says it about this Aveda. The Gemara says, Omer Reish Lakish, Ein Adam Eved Aveda, a person, any Aveda. Elim Kein Nichnas Bei Ruach Shtus. Unless if a Ruach Shtus comes into the person.
Does that apply to men?
Also, men never sin. Never.
Women.
Only women.
The Sote is only women. There's no man involved.
By the way, it's not true. We'll see later. If the man is guilty, it doesn't work for the women either. Anyway, we'll see about that later. So now, the question was, what is this Ruach Shtus? What is the foolish spirit that enters a person's mind? So Chassidus explains, a lot of Mefarshim really say this also. What is the Shtus? A person thinks, big deal that I sin. I'm still Jewish. I'm still connected. As the expression goes, Odeno b'yahadusay, he's still a Jew. What's the big deal? I didn't have it. Okay, so I didn't have it. What's the big deal? Therefore, it says, if the same Jew would be told to bow down to an idol, he's not going to do it. He won't commit idolatry. Why won't he commit idolatry? Because over there's no mistake. You can't say I'm still connected by bowing down to an idol and accepting who knows what instead of God. It's not going to work. The truth is, and this is what the Gemara is saying, every sin is idol worshipping. That's the Ruach Shtus. What's the Ruach Shtus? What's the foolish spirit that the Shlokish says is entering a person's mind? So it's explained, the Shtus is that it's okay to sin because I'm still connected. And the truth is, every sin, no matter what the sin is, in thought, in speech, or in action, is idol worshipping. Why is it idol worshipping? Because if you look at reality, God is standing right over us, in Hashem Nitzav Olav, right, like it says in the Pasuk, by Yaakov Avinu, Hashem stands over the person, and in front of God's face, you do something against him. In front of God's face. And God knows what we think also. Right? You don't know what I think, you don't know what I say, but what I do, you know. But by Hashem, Hashem knows what we think, and Hashem knows what we say, and Hashem knows what we do. So in the presence of Hashem, you're thinking an evil thought, or a sinful thought, or speech, or action. So what are you basically doing? You're committing idolatry. You can mamish doing Avodah Zarah. You're denying the existence of God. Because if you would feel Hashem's presence, right, then you wouldn't sin. What is the beginning of, say, in Shulchan Aruch, the beginning, the first sif in Shulchan Aruch, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tomid. I put God opposite me constantly. So it says in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the big Shulchan Aruch says it, but Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, if a person puts God right in front of them, they'll never come to sin. Because then you can't make a mistake. So what is the reason why people sin? The Gemara says, because this is the Ruach Shtus. The reality is, the truth is, every sin is idol worshipping. Every sin is Avodah Zarah. A person sins. Yeah, big deal, I'm still Jewish. What did I do already? I did this and that. So this really applies to every single Jew. Does the Shtus. No matter what the sin is. And the reason why this is openly mentioned by the Soter is a very simple thing. God is the husband. The Bnei Yisrael are the wife. Right? When a Jew does an Aveda, it's committing adultery. Right? That's a heavy sin. It's committing adultery. So the Torah is using this expression, Kisista Ishtei, the concept of Shtus. The Torah doesn't say by Shabbos or by any other mitzvah. The Torah is saying it is by this din, because this is clearly the concept of the relationship of husband and wife between Hashem and the Jew, and the person that's sinning, committing adultery. So this is the story. That's the shtus that the person does. And therefore, that's why the pasuk opens up over here. Ish ish kisishte ishtei, umola b'mal and she committed treachery against him. Now it's interesting, in a few psukim, it's going to say, the Torah is using here two terminologies, the Mefarshim say, that are similar to objects of the Beis HaMikdash. Me'ila, when you misuse an object of the Beis HaMikdash, is called Me'ila, and Tamei. Tamei, no, Beis HaMikdash, Tamei and Tumah. Both of these expressions are used by the Saita. Here the Torah says, Umo'ala v'imal, she did a treachery against the husband, or in this case, against Hashem also. And the Torah speaks about vihinitma or loinitma. The Torah in the few psukim is going to use the word tuma. These are both expressions that are used in reference to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. V'shachav isha isa shich v'zera. And what happens if, and this is again an accusation, but what happens if itaka happened that the woman lived with this guy? V'nela me'ene isha, and it was concealed from the eyes of her husband. V'nistera, and she became secluded. V'hinitma, and she could have become, you know, this is all again an accusation, it's not for sure happening. V'eid einba, and there's no witness. V'hilay nispasa, and she wasn't forced. Yeah. Meaning, God forbid, she wasn't raped. Because if a man took a married woman, and God forbid raped her, so then it was against her will. So she is not forbidden to the husband. She's not forbidden to the husband, unless chas v'shalom, it's a wife of a kohen. What?
What if a woman doesn't get pregnant, and her and her husband create a plot? Then you accuse me. So we go there. I drink this thing, so I get pregnant because I haven't done anything wrong. The question is, would she get pregnant if they go in with such a plot?
The Gemara at the end of Saita says like this. The Gemara says, what happens? She's innocent. The Gemara says, if she's barren, she will give birth to children. So I think it's Amar Rabbi Akiva. I think it was Rabbi Akiva that said this. So Rabbi Akiva asked, so let all the non-pregnant women, barren women, create this plot, and they will get pregnant. Guaranteed. You don't need infertility treatment. You need a Saita treatment. So the Gemara answers. I think it's again Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva answers. What it means is not that if she's not pregnant, she'll get pregnant. If she gave birth to, nothing personal, girls, she'd give birth to boys. If she gave birth to short kids, if you'd be tall kids, handsome kids, beautiful kids. So the Gemara says, not pregnant, not. So Taisus and the Gemara over there ask, okay, so all the people that want to have boys, do the Saita treatment. You want to have beautiful children, you do the Saita treatment. And Taisus doesn't answer. It remains by a question. But you're right. The Gemara asks, says your statement, that if that's the case, it's a good way of doing it. Huh? But no, but the Gemara does say that you give birth easily, and you have to understand, you know how much embarrassment went on over here? You're dragging the wife to the Kayan. I'm saying if she's innocent, right? The Kayanim know about it. Everybody knows in the Beis HaMikdash what's going on, right? And there's a whole process, and you have to do things. It's very embarrassing. I understand. It's still embarrassing. Let me tell you something. Would you like to be sued in court for something that you're really innocent about? Trust me, you wouldn't want. No, I know not. Not a guess. No, it is embarrassing.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. Well, for some people, maybe it is worth it. No, to have children.
Famous. You do something wrong to get famous.
A lot of people do that. Yeah.
Considering that how it's a big deal if someone gets embarrassed by somebody else. Why would the law do that? You have to do it in front of everybody.
There are certain times the Torah says dafka, you have to do it in public. Okay, so Torah says two things. Number one, the pasuk says that everybody should learn a lesson and not also do the sin, because we'll see how embarrassing it is. And another concept is part of the forgiveness for the terrible sin is the fact that you got embarrassed, but that's Hashem doing it. You understand? Hashem is telling you to be embarrassed. Hashem can tell Beis Din to kill. That doesn't mean they're murderers. Okay? It's Hashem doing it. Hashem sometimes wants the person who sinned and punished to be in public. Not, number one, for other people to learn not to do it. Right? But another reason is that's part of the kapara, part of the tshuva, part of the forgiveness, is the embarrassment. So that also is for a reason.
Like kind of sacrifice.
Yeah.
And then they say if you embarrass somebody, it's like you're killing the person.
What? If you embarrass somebody, you say killing. But that's why for an Hashem tells the person to be embarrassed. It's part of the thing. Now, just to say another din, which is very interesting, it's a very big problem. If a woman commits adultery, even today, okay, the din is if she's caught and the husband believes it, the Gemara learns it out from a pasuk, also in the Gemara site, the Gemara learns it out from a pasuk, asura lebal va'asura leboil. She cannot stay married to the husband, and she cannot get married to the guy she fooled around with. Okay? But just in today's world, okay, if a married woman has an affair with her husband, another man, doesn't really matter if he's married or not, she cannot stay married to the husband, and she cannot marry that guy.
Even if he forgives her?
Even if he forgives her. Now, there's another way of doing it, that he doesn't believe her. But if he believes her, or there's witnesses, if there's witnesses, then they cannot stay married.
And it doesn't hold true for the man if he does that
today. A man can have many wives.
What about if the person is
adultery? But it's not adultery. He's transgressing Rabbeinu Gershom's decree, unless he is Sephardic.
It's not adultery.
Adultery is not a sin, huh? What do you say? What do you say?
What about if that person is a goy?
It's still asura lebal and asura lebal, according to most opinions. Now, generally, what's done is that the wife doesn't tell the husband, or even if the husband does find out about it, he says, I don't believe you. But if the husband believes her, she has to do it. In fact, the Gemara asks, one of the proofs of this is, by the way, that it applies even to a guy. How did Esther marry Ahasuerus? According to one opinion, Esther was married to Mordechai. Right? Esther was married to Mordechai. To Mordechai. And when she lived with Ahasuerus,
she married also.
So how does she live with Ahasuerus if she's a married woman? Right? So the Gemara answers, how was Esther allowed to commit adultery? So the answer is, the Gemara's expression is karka elam, which means that she was like the ground, like the earth. What does that mean? A woman in adultery is passive, unless she willingly does it. But God forbid if a woman is forced, so then she's not actively involved like a man is, so therefore she does not have to give up her life for adultery. For instance, God forbid, if a woman is being raped, a married woman is being raped, she doesn't have to give up her life. But a man does. A woman doesn't. Why? Because a man is active and the woman is passive. So that's why it says when Esther was told by Mordechai, go to Ahasuerus, and beg for your people. And Esther said, but I can't go for 30 days. Okay, and Esther said, okay, fast, and the whole thing. What did Esther say? Kasha avadati avadati. I'll be lost. So it says, lost in this world and in the world to come, because now she was willingly going to Ahasuerus, so she's going to lose Mordechai and lose everything together, this world, that world, because then she was going willingly. It's a whole shy, it's not so simple, by the way, how she did it, what's the story, but again, the wife of a kohen is a different story, because then the kohen can't stay married to her. But this is, you know, so if there's actual adultery and proven adultery, then she cannot stay married to her husband. She cannot get married to the guy she wants to get married.
What about the
husband? In fact, I saw in the tshuva, when I was dealing with this issue, later I started looking up things. There was somebody asked the shaila. A couple came, they wanted to get married. Okay? And in passing, she told the rabbi that she got divorced from her husband. The first husband that she got to get from didn't know she had an affair with this guy. But now she admitted to the rabbi, to marry them, the new couple, that she committed adultery with this guy when she was still married.
Even though she has a get now.
But the husband never knew about it. He never knew about the affair.
But now the rabbi knows.
But the rabbi knows. The question, can he do their wedding? So,
what about the husband who does commit adultery?
Never.
No.
It just doesn't happen. Yes, because again, a husband, according to Torah, can have a few wives.
Oh,
it's religion.
That's good religion. That's beauty of religion.
Don't ask the question if you
don't
want the answer.
Well,
is a goy also not according to Shiva Mitzvah?
Yeah, a goy can't commit adultery either, but there's no din of Asur al-Abal, Asur al-Abal. I mean,
why is it
because it's Dafka Bayin, they learn it off from a pasuk.
Have a religious wedding, you know, with the goy.
No, but here, the whole story at the site is, there's no proof. And the Eidein Bar means there's not even, the Grashi says, there's not even one witness.
But you have proof that they were together, though.
No, there was an assumption. There was witnesses, the Machlekes, one or two, that they saw them going in a room together.
Yeah.
But they have no proof that there was any action took place.
No, but the witnesses that they were together, you know.
Yeah, but it's not enough to create this. That she was warned, and it didn't, you know, it's only an accusation. Because if there's one witness, then the water is not going to work.
If the slave was Jewish, stealing some money, and what they do? Like men, they make him asma for them? Or what? What's the story?
No, it would, that's a different story. Not now. Okay. So, v'avar alav ruach kina. And his spirit of jealousy passed over the husband. V'kine esishte, and he warned his wife. V'hin itmon, she became defiled. Meaning, again, not that somebody actually knew that something happened. By the way, there's another din. While we're on the topic. There's another very interesting din. A woman who comes and says that I was not allowed to marry you from the beginning. She's not believed. She's not believed anymore to say, I'm not allowed to stay married. I'm not allowed to marry you. Why? Because maybe she wants to marry somebody else, so she's finding an excuse that she was not allowed to marry her husband to begin with.
I don't understand what that means.
To make it null and void.
To make it excuse to give.
A kohen cannot marry, I'll give an example, okay? A kohen cannot marry a woman who had relations with a goy. Correct?
Right.
Now, a kohen marries this woman. Later on in the marriage, the lady says to the husband, you know something? I had relations with a goy before we got married. You're not allowed to stay married to me. Then she's not believed.
She's not believed?
No.
What if there are witnesses?
Well, how do you have witnesses? Right now, you don't look for those witnesses. But right now, she's not believed because maybe she wants to marry somebody else. She came up with this excuse that she can't stay married to the guy. Or if the husband doesn't believe her. If the husband doesn't believe her, then he doesn't believe her. But by the way, I had another issue also today. No, this one's not so bad. This is actually about a kohen. A woman was married. This is a 70-year-old woman wants to get married to another older gentleman she met. But this woman was married to a Jew for many years, and then they got divorced, but they didn't have a civil, they only had a civil divorce, not a get. Okay? And she wants to get married to this guy. The problem is, this guy's a kohen. Can she marry that guy because he's a kohen, and she is a divorcee?
The first husband died already or not?
No, he didn't. I asked that question. I don't think he died yet. Kill him.
Because then she's a widow.
No, but over here's a different story. There's another thing which is done in today's world, by the way, for a lot of these issues.
She's a widow.
It's all part of this.
She was not divorced.
She was never divorced.
Right. She was never divorced, right? Of course. So the answer, she probably can't.
It depends.
It's a good thing you don't answer my phone calls. The question is, who did the first wedding? If the first wedding was not kosher at all, what happened to before Rabbi did that wedding, right? First wedding with the first husband. Okay? And they never had any association with religious Jews. So according to Halacha, they didn't have kosher witnesses. Right? They didn't have a kosher chuppah. They didn't have kosher witnesses. If they didn't have kosher witnesses, then in technical Halacha, they're not married.
And their kids are what?
Mamzer?
No.
So what do you mean?
Out of wedlock. Huh? I mean, it's not a blemish because the pearl did. But halachically, she's not an Eish Yesish, because there were no, you need Eidim, kosher Eidim to make, right? A kosher thing to make an Eish Yesish. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the kids, God forbid, but the woman, technically, is not considered a married woman. Therefore, for instance, though, if there were religious people at the wedding, maybe that saw the ring giving, so maybe there were kosher witnesses, or maybe they lived in a religious community, where people knew them as husband and wife, you know, and people saw them going into the house, or acting as husband and wife, going into the house as husband and wife, that could also be some type of aedus on the marriage, okay? Lepel, these people, was married by a Reform rabbi, there were no kosher witnesses, there was nothing done, I mean, they never lived in a religious area. So therefore, under normal circumstances, you would tell Mechatchila, go get a get from the first husband. Because they're still married, but not halacha, but you know, it's better to get a get. What happens if they don't? And the woman married somebody else and they have kids. The kids are not mamzerim because they were never married. Correct? So in all these dinim that we're talking about now, that a woman who commits adultery is forbidden for the husband and for the guy she's living with, that's only if she had a kosher wedding. Right? If she didn't have a kosher wedding, she was never a married woman, to say she committed adultery, so she's forbidden for both of them. You see what I'm saying? And then, technically, if she doesn't get a get, then she doesn't need, she can marry a kohen too.
How about the kohen? She can't marry
what?
If she had a get.
If she was a reform convert, I mean, if she had a reform wedding, and they got a get, then she cannot marry a kohen. Because the Gemara says, even if there's a reyach get, even if there's a smell of a get, right? But this woman never got a get. If she got a get, a proper get, she cannot marry this guy.
She can't get adultery?
If they're not kosher marriage? Two kosher ads are more important than the written ketubah.
The ketubah has nothing to do with the marriage. The ketubah is a financial responsibility of husband to wife. The most important people at the chuppah, believe it or not, is not the rabbi, not the singers, the two kosher witnesses are the most important guys. They're the best men of the wedding. The guys that watch, that's what makes it. That's what makes it. Not the rabbi, not the ksuba, not nothing.
And what makes those two guys
kosher?
Just as long as they're Jewish? Or?
No, they have to be Shomer Shabbat, they have to be not related, they should be... what?
No, I didn't realize how important it was to have
the
edim
for the ring.
The
edim for the ring.
I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Or which edim? The witnesses for the ring.
For the ring.
For the ring.
Not the ksuva.
Okay.
What? This is a good ring and whatever.
No, to see are they amakadoshly.
We just did
it.
One
night, you're eight
on the
ketubah.
Really married?
Wow.
Everyone doesn't have the kosher witnesses. It's not acceptable. As the
you need kosher witnesses.
If you don't have it, the ketubah is not worth a penny.
The ksuba is not again. Just for the record, ksuba is a legal financial document between husband and wife. That's all
financial.
It is. The financial responsibilities.
So it
of a healer, it doesn't even say this in the ksuba, but the Tanaya ksuba is the marital relations. He has to give her, he has to support her, he has to heal her, he has to take care of her. Okay, it's a financial document. Chachamim said a man cannot live with his wife without a kosher ksuba to protect the wife, that in case, God forbid, there's a divorce or death, that she gets X amount of money from the estate. Okay, it's a financial security for the wife. It has nothing to do with the marriage. What makes a woman an Ashes Ish liable to adultery and all that is not even the wedding. Okay. Let's take 3 minutes now till 9 o'clock. Today we do it all together. Kedushin or Edison and Nisuyin. Okay? In the time of the Gemara says, Nesim Lepsula Yubeis Chodesh. Okay? When a virgin girl is going to get married in the time of the Gemara. Today, they both agreed. The boy went over to the girl in front of two witnesses and said, Areyat Mekudesh Asli B'Tabazu Kedas Meshav Yisrael. Okay? That was Kedushin. A year later, they got married. Now, what did this Kedushin do? Today, we do it all under the Chuppah. For obvious... Edison and Kedushin, same thing. Synonymous. Kedushin or Edison. Okay? What did that do? That made the woman his, meaning, if she commits adultery, she gets killed. If they want to break up, they need a get. But they're not allowed to live together yet. Until you have what's called Nisuin, which is what we call Chuppah, okay, and Yichud. Sfardim do the yichud under the chuppah when they wrap the talis around them. That is the yichud. In Ashkenazim, after the chuppah, they go to yichud. Okay? That part two allows the man and wife to live together. Okay? But this din of seita, or all the adultery laws, apply once the man does areyat mekadesh shel zibit tabazu kedas meshav yisrael, or areyat mekadesh shel zibit cups, if it's worth a prut or whatever. It doesn't matter. Then she becomes, as far as the world is concerned, she's ushered for the whole world. She can't live with her husband yet either, because they're not married. 12 months later, they would get married, because they didn't have caterers with party planners. The Chacham gave her 12 months, they had to get the clothes ready, and the food ready, and the house ready, you know. So they gave him 12 months to get married. But then they became allowed to live with each other.
They can see each other.
But they can see each other, but they can't be with each other.
In Iran, they but I remember they in Shiraz, they had Kiddushin.
Yeah.
Separately, in separate months, they would do Kiddushin. And so
that was in time of the Gemara. Today we don't do it.
Engagement, they do
today, it. I don't mean today in the 2000s, I mean... All the way back, we don't do it. Back a long time. Because then, God forbid, if you break the engagement, then you need to get. And she becomes a gerusha. She cannot marry a kohen. So we don't do all that. Okay.